You're back with The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. I was born in October 1973, and although she didn't know it at the time, my mother was pregnant with me on the day the Roe v. Wade decision affirmed the constitutional right to obtain an abortion. She was unmarried, a graduate student, and already a single mother. My mom chose to carry her pregnancy to term. She chose. She chose. And it was a choice she'd been fighting for years as a young reproductive rights advocate. This is my mom.
Diana Gray.
From 1969 to 1971, my mom was a graduate student at the University of Washington in Seattle, divorced and already mother to my older sister, Elizabeth. She was also a bit of a repro rights badass.
Washington State made it legal in 1970, 3 years before Roe versus Wade. So we put together a booklet on guiding people through birth control, abortion, and venereal disease issues. And it included a lot of contacts in it to help people on campus understand better their access to sexual health care.
And y'all, don't let the prim and proper little old lady voice make you underestimate my mom, her friends, or the work they were doing.
The title of my booklet was How to Have Intercourse Without Getting Screwed, A Guide to Birth Control, Abortion, and Venereal Disease.
Okay, Mama. Now, I asked what she and her fellow students were doing to help women gain access to abortion.
We developed a safe house system. So we had a hotline staffed by volunteers in our group. We also had volunteer host homes. We had volunteer transportation assistance, and we had providers that were willing to provide the abortions for the out-of-towners. So when someone needed an abortion, they called the hotline, they got the information they need, and they got connected with a volunteer that would meet them either at the bus station or the train station and transport them to the host home. Another volunteer would take them in for the procedure and stay with them, and then return them to the host home where they would remain for another 24 hours while they were monitored to make sure there were no side effects or, you know, fevers or anything like that. Then they were transported back to their source of transportation, in most cases the bus station or the train station.
Following in her footsteps, I've worked as a clinic guard volunteer, helping people seek abortions by walking safely through the gauntlet of angry protesters at the clinic door. But the work that my mom was doing, that took a different kind of courage. And I asked if she was nervous.
No, I actually loved it. We were kind of breaking the law because the law was intended for residents of Washington State. And in some cases, people were. But if they weren't, they used our address and telephone number when they registered for an abortion.
Born in 1973, abortion has been legal my entire life. I've always known that I could choose. I could choose. Now, before I've even reached my 48th birthday, I may have to tell my daughters they no longer have that right. So I couldn't end our conversation without asking my mom about the new anti-abortion law in Texas.
I absolutely had a gut-level reaction because I thought, oh my goodness, they have made this law such that even the kinds of things that we were doing, we would be subject to prosecution. And it just made me sick. The only thing I can think of is maybe people in adjacent states would have some compassion and provide this help for the women of Texas until they can get this straightened out, because it's just appalling.
Thanks to Diana Gray, my mom, for sharing her story and for modeling what it looks like to have compassion. And this reminder, there's no progress without struggle. There's no lasting victory without meaningful defeats. And we find strength for the continuing struggle by looking to our past. Here to reveal the strength-giving stories of the long struggle for abortion access is Laura Kaplan, author of The Story of Jane, the legendary underground feminist abortion service. Welcome to The Takeaway, Laura.
Thank you, Melissa.
Tell our listeners what the Jane Network was and what it meant to countless women back in the day.
Well, this was the very early days of the women's liberation movement, and groups all over the country were forming counseling services to help women navigate the often dangerous underground abortion system. System is a weird word. And that's how Jane started as well. We were formerly known as the Abortion Counseling Service of Women's Liberation in Chicago.
You just used the first person plural there, we. Tell us how you were involved.
I joined the group in, the group started in 1969. I joined in the fall of 1971. So we started just sussing out the underground abortion providers in the city of Chicago to find the ones that were the most reputable, honest, and competent, and to prepare women for their experience and send them off to these providers. But what was unusual about Jane was within 2 years, and really by the time I joined in the fall of 1971, the women in the group had learned themselves how to perform DNC abortions and induced miscarriages. So we became a completely women-run underground abortion service in the city of Chicago, working out of our own apartments, our friends' apartments, preparing women in advance, sharing information as much as we could share. I mean, you don't remember, but in those days, there was very little information available. So that's, in a nutshell, how we evolved. And we estimate we performed in our 4 years approximately 11,000 or more illegal, safe, illegal, low-cost abortions for women in Chicago and the surrounding area.
Can you share with us the stories of even one person who you provided, you or the Jane Network provided care for in this way? What were the reasons that women were seeking abortions?
Well, we never asked women because we didn't feel that that was an important question or one they needed to share with us why they were seeking an abortion. For some women, I mean, it's 50 years ago, and it's hard to remember individual cases. But for some women, it was, you know, there was an accident with their birth control. Well, I'll tell you the story of a friend of mine. She had an IUD implanted, and it was implanted incorrectly. And she wound up pregnant while she was still in college. So that's one case. Some were women who had a number of children already and just could not see their way to having another child. Some were in very controlling relationships where they weren't allowed to use, by their partner, allowed to use birth control. So the reasons were myriad, but like I said, the reasons didn't matter to us. If a woman really wanted an abortion and felt she needed one, that was good enough for us. And you have to remember, once they contacted us, they were entering an illegal arena. And what we realized was the women who came to us were just desperate, because here they were coming to total strangers to help them with this problem.
How did you get your message out to people, given that it did have to be covert?
So we did some advertising, you know, little posters that were put around in college dormitories and payphone booths. Remember payphones? You might not. That said, pregnant, don't want to be, call Jane with our phone number. I mean, and you have to remember, there was no technology. I mean, I didn't have an answering machine. There weren't answering machines. So it was all very much like that. We took out ads in underground newspapers, but very rapidly, our phone number and information about us spread throughout Chicago. And also the Women's Liberation Union in Chicago had a phone number, and a lot of women called there to get our phone number. So by the time I joined, we were so inundated with calls that we didn't need to do any advertising. And especially our information spread throughout the primarily Black communities on the south and west side of Chicago.
How do you react to the current Texas abortion bill law?
I'm just outraged and horrified, and I can't even express exactly how outraged and horrified I am. I see in this law not only the 6-week limit, but the bounty for turning in others sort of echoes of Nazi Germany, when young people were encouraged to inform on their teachers, their neighbors, even their parents. I mean, it just reeks to me.
Laura Kaplan, author of The Story of Jane, the legendary underground feminist abortion service. Thank you for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.